Election Day is less than 2 weeks away, but lots of people have already cast their ballots. All but 13 states have some form of early voting this year, and as of earlier this week, more than 10 million people had already voted early.
My name is Zane Nordine. I'm 24 years old and I'm from Houston, Texas. I'm voting early, hoping to avoid long lines, but that did not end up happening today.
Chuck Faircloth, 65, from Macon, Georgia. My daddy fought in the Second World War, and he told me every time the ballot's open, I needed to be here.
Kathy Taylor, 55, Macon, Georgia. I wanted my vote to count.
In Harris County, Texas, which includes Houston, more than 180,000 voters have already cast their ballots as of early this week. That's a voting rate on par with presidential year elections. The big race, Senator Ted Cruz, is facing off against Democrat Beto O'Rourke. So why vote early?
Pamela Giroux, 75. Because my husband insists. I'd much prefer to go the normal day and see all my friends. Is that honest enough for you?
Kristen Williams, and my age is 46.
Carolyn Bosma, 59. We always do it together.
Oh, yeah.
Especially for the LGBT community, the Trump administration has been rolling back a lot of protections, civil rights, certainly using us as red meat.
Riley Miller, 36. Just to get a head start on the race. I voted the straight Republican Party ticket.
Karina, I'm 24 and I'm from Houston.
Isabel Botello, I'm 49. Just to kind of beat some of the madness.
Make sure you get it done before you start procrastinating.
Beat the crowds.
This year's election's important because I think there's a lot of flux going on in the parties and what they stand for and what individuals stand for in those parties. And I think that the votes, at some level, will send some signals.
Stephen King, I'm 66. We voted early for 20 years at this spot. I've never seen it like this. Never.
And this enthusiasm can be felt over in Georgia, too. In the first week of in-person early voting, over 480,000 votes were cast in the state, three times as many as cast at this point in 2014. Some locations have had three-hour lines, but that didn't deter voters in Macon, an hour and a half south of Atlanta. There, the state's governor's race between Democrat Stacey Abrams and Republican Brian Kemp is on many voters' minds.
Lisa Dinkins, I am 51 years old, and I am from Macon, Georgia. I'm making sure I can vote, because I may be get hectic the day of, so it's best to go on out and get it now just in case something happened the day of.
My name is Vernon Rux. I decided to come early in case there is a discrepancy. I would have time to resolve it.
Philip Floyd. Don't need no Democrats in here.
If it had an R in front of it, I'd vote for it.
Very important to vote for Stacey Abrams.
Rosa Shaheen. I'm 92 years old, and I was born and reared in Macon. Well, I think it's every citizen's responsibility, yeah, to vote and get somebody they think that'll help the people.
This is Politics with Amy Walter from The Takeaway, and today we'll be examining all things early voting. We start with what we actually know about the numbers and what it means for the outcome of the midterms.
The early vote is telling us that we're going to have a high turnout election. We're seeing record numbers of early votes for a midterm, and in some cases in any election, including a presidential election, in many states across the country.
That's Michael McDonald, a professor at the University of Florida and founder of the U.S. Elections Project. He joined us via Skype. I spoke with him and Sasha Eisenberg, author of The Victory Lab, about the numbers.
In some states, over two-thirds of the votes will be cast prior to Election Day, and so if this early vote continues at this pace, we should see a very high turnout midterm election, maybe the highest in anyone's memory.
Are there a couple of states that you're looking at more closely than others in terms of how many people vote early and then what this early vote portends?
Of course, we're tracking the states that have the competitive races, and not all of them have high volume of early votes. So there's limited data in some states, but there's a lot of data in some other states. So we do get a lot of data out of Georgia, out of Florida, out of Nevada, for example, and all of those have interesting races. And then there's lots of other things going on across the country, but we get a lot of really solid, good data out of those three states. And we can see from those data right now that early voting is running at, in some cases, a record pace for a midterm election. And, you know, again, we'll just need to sit tight, see where we are by the end of next week. And that may help us understand who may win the election. You know, there's one other thing that's related here, though, to the record pace that we're seeing in these states is that pollsters make certain assumptions about who they think is going to be a likely voter. And not all pollsters use the same methodology to determine who they think is going to be a likely voter. Some of these pollsters are thinking that perhaps the electorate's going to look like a typical midterm election where we get maybe 40% of those eligible to vote. I don't think that's going to happen here. I think we're going to have a turnout rate that's higher than that. We could be at least the mid 40% range. So if we beat the 48% turnout that we had in 1966, we're going to have a turnout rate that will be the highest that we've seen in the last century. And so if pollsters aren't taking that into account when they're making up their likely voter models and weighting their polls to what they think is the profile of the voters that are going to show up for the election, then they're going to miss and they'll probably underestimate in some meaningful ways the contours of the electorate. And that could also throw off their polling numbers. So I would have more trust right now in models that have a higher turnout rather than those that think, say, the electorate's going to look like it did in 2014.
Sasha, what about you? What do you know and what has all your research shown you about the early vote and what it does or doesn't tell us about the upcoming election and the kinds of people who are showing up?
So I think what's important to realize is that while we get a lot of data from states and counties, campaigns have a lot more data about voters and often on a daily basis are getting lists back from election authorities about which individuals have voted. And so, you know, if you're a campaign and you've identified 200,000 voters in your district or state, or your get out the vote targets, every day you're getting a list of who actually voted. Did Amy vote yesterday or not? And so it opens up all these tactical questions. And one of the things that I think should give us a fair bit of uncertainty about trying to decode from early vote tallies some idea of the contours of the race is that different campaigns and parties have different strategies and tactics about how to approach early vote. And so some campaigns are making concerted efforts to mobilize certain types of voters over this period. And because this is still sort of in its infancy, it's difficult to, I think, come up with a clear idea that certain types of voters are voting early instead of just voting on election day, as opposed to being mobilized for early vote who wouldn't otherwise be voting in an election.
Yeah, that's my question. And to both of you, but Sasha, I can start with you about this idea that really, you don't want to read too much into the early vote because the theory is these are voters who would have shown up anyway. You can have huge turnout in the early vote, but it doesn't mean that you're going to see an equally large turnout on election day.
Right. I mean, so everything we're talking about, I think, is happening at the margins. And, you know, a lot of elections are decided at the margins. So the margins are important. I think two things to keep in mind as you talk about early voter or what some people call convenience voting, which refers to any situation where voters are not required to cast a ballot in person at their neighborhood voting location. So if you take all that stuff together, I think there are two big rules to keep in mind what we've learned from about a generation of this expanding. One, there have been lots of studies, and a lot of the promises when states turn to early vote is more people will vote. I think in aggregate, it is hard to see that giving people opportunities to vote in different ways and at different times in different places has not dramatically increased the pool of people who are participating. And then the second thing is that we see an increase in early vote year to year in states to the extent that they keep their rules consistent. And so there's, you know, often if you're comparing 2018 to 2014 or 2010, states have changed their rules during that time. So there's not always a clear sort of linear comparison. But more importantly, more people are participating in this. And the bulk of those overwhelmingly are people who are shifting their voting from election day to earlier. And so, yeah, we shouldn't see gains in early vote as a sort of net increase in participation. A lot of that is shifting.
Michael, what about you? What do you think about that?
Well, I think I disagree with just about everything that was said just then, because what this is analysis is missing is that we are seeing historic numbers of early votes so far, in some places that are surpassing a presidential election. So we can see lots of energy out there at this moment. There are states out there that will have more than two-thirds of their votes are being cast early. And we should get a very good sense of whether or not we're going to have high turnout in those elections, that it won't just be cannibalizing of people moving around. If we see turnout numbers that are exceeding 2014, in just the early vote, that the number of early voters have already passed the total vote in 2014, I think that will be a fairly clear signal that we are going to have a higher turnout election. And there are some states that we will get a signal like that, most likely. Places like Nevada and Colorado and Oregon and Washington, they all have extremely high levels of early voting. So we can get a fairly strong signal out of those states. In other states like Tennessee today, will surpass its 2014 early vote. And we still have a week and a half of early voting to go. Over 600,000 people have voted in Tennessee so far. You know, we could be looking at 1.2 million people who have voted early in Tennessee. It's probably not just a shuffling around of when people are voting. It's also has something to do with greater enthusiasm. And there's a lot of good signals to suggest that we're going to have higher turnout. The special elections, we could look at the primary elections. Both of them had very high turnout. We've got the polls where people are self-reporting high interest in voting. And now we're getting these early vote numbers. And we even look further down and dig down in some of the data in the states that are available, where the data are available to us. We can look at past vote history. And we can see that, yes, there are people who didn't participate in 2014 who are participating in this election. So there's a lot of strong signals pointing to the fact that we're going to have higher turnout in this election, that this isn't what we're witnessing right now, which again are just historic numbers, isn't just a consequence of people shuffling around when they're going to vote. It really is a signal that people are engaged and enthused right now in this election.
Right. Now, 2014 did have very low turnout. To me, what I'm looking for personally is not just that it exceeds 2014, but we're getting somewhere to a level, no one's expecting it to hit the level of a presidential turnout, but getting and flirting close with that level. Is that what you're seeing?
Yeah, right now, again, in some states, we're actually above the 2016 election. Minnesota is one of these states. And they've been reporting their numbers for weeks now, and they've continued to be above 2016. So again, we'll just have to wait and see how this all plays out. I agree that at least some caution's warranted in whether or not this will level out. But I think the best way to think about this is that we're looking probably at a turnout rate that's going to be above 1966. And it could go much higher. It could go above 50%. And if it goes above 50%, then what we're really looking at is a turnout rate. You'd have to go all the way back to 1914 to see a turnout rate that was above 50% of those eligible. So this electorate is looking more like a presidential than a midterm, although I don't think we'll be at a presidential level. But it looks more like a presidential than a typical midterm election that we've had over the last three decades.
Sasha, I remember, I'm old enough to remember, maybe you do too, reading a lot in 2016, especially via Twitter, of campaign folks in Florida, especially those affiliated with the Clinton campaign, who said, oh my gosh, our early vote is so good, and it's a pretty good sign that Hillary Clinton's going to win Florida. And of course, it didn't exactly work out that way. So again, as we're going into these next couple of weeks here, trying to analyze the numbers that are coming out, what do we have to be careful to look for so that we don't end up in the same place as we did in 2016, which was getting data that was then ultimately not really indicative of the final vote?
So, you know, a lot of the public-facing data, we'll see the party registration of people who have already cast ballots, the race or ethnicity in some states. We should not assume that those are monolithic groups. Not everybody who's registered as a Democrat in Florida or has a history of voting in a Democratic primary in a state is going to cast the ballot for Hillary Clinton over Donald Trump or for a given Democratic Senate candidate over a given Republican candidate. So just looking at, you know, who's winning in terms of have more registered Democrats or registered Republicans cast ballots has all the problems that you could infer. The other thing worth keeping in mind, especially with 2016, is how late movement in an election intersects with early vote. So, you know, the second Comey letter came out right around this time 2 years ago. And so, you know, as we look at news events, you know, I don't know, the caravan, I guess, and the Republican messaging on that, or the president claiming he's going to issue a new tax cut, things that we think might have some persuasive power over voters, we should remember that a significant number of votes have been cast before those events take place. And I think that that's something that 2016 should be instructive on and give us a bit of caution.
And Michael, is there a difference between people who show up to vote early? You have states that allow you to come and vote at a certain location before Election Day versus those states where you can vote via the mail, you get an absentee ballot sent to you.
Right. So let me first respond to the question that you just posed, which is the election forecasting question. And the weekend before the election in 2016, I did an analysis of the early vote in the states where we were getting high early vote numbers. And you know, by and large, I correctly predicted what was going to happen in the 2016 election. Nevada and Colorado, where we get very high levels of early voting, correctly predicted those states. And then I correctly predicted how Trump would have to win the election, which was he would have to win one of these low early voting states like Pennsylvania, Michigan, or Wisconsin. He ended up winning all three of them. But again, I think there's some value in the signals that we're getting from the early voting data. And that really plays into the question that you asked me, which is that, yes, there are actually differences in the way in which people participate. Republicans tend to vote by mail. That's not a universal truth. The Democrats tend to vote in person early. And there's this this pattern that you see in the early vote as you get closer to Election Day. That's why I'm saying right now, I'm not drawing any inferences about what's happening here. I think by the end of next week, once we get the in-person early vote in a number of states, we'll be able to tell what's happened.
Sasha, what about early vote and the impact on some underrepresented groups, thinking about voters of color or younger people or people who maybe aren't frequent voters? Is there any evidence or anything that you're seeing in terms of campaign strategy that is aimed at using the early vote to get those voters engaged in the election?
Definitely Democratic campaigns that are focusing their mobilization strategies see early voting as far more friendly to the sort of lifestyles and calendars, and you know, are developing, refining get-out-the-vote tactics. There's been this sort of culture of plan making, which is a tool that comes out of the behavioral sciences, get people to visualize how they're going to get to the polls, what time they're going to go, how they're going to get there. Some campaigns calling people back or sending them a reminder of the plans that they had made. As more sort of paths open up for people to vote, the thinking is that it's more conducive to the lifestyles of people who may have multiple jobs or are going to school at odd hours, you know. And I think that there are a lot of opportunities with very targeted digital advertising to take advantage of the sort of longer window and the knowledge in some cases about who's voted and who hasn't to run really tailored campaigns at the voters who are still outstanding.
And Michael, if you can, you know, kind of think into the future down the road, maybe 10 years or more, is this what we're going to be doing, that Election Day itself is just one day on the calendar and that majority of people voting in this country are going to vote before the election even happens?
Yeah, and that's the way we used to vote a long, long time ago, back before 1845, when we set the uniform day for voting. Elections were held over multiple days, and that was to allow people the opportunity to travel from rural areas into a county courthouse to vote. And so this is nothing new. We've had it for a long time in our history of our country, and then we stopped having it for a while, then we started having it again. And starting in the 1970s, states started liberalizing their early voting laws to permit first no-excuse absentee voting, and then we saw permanent absentee voting, and so many voters were voting by mail in states like Oregon and Washington that the election officials there just sort of threw up their hands and said, why are we having these polling locations open? They're very expensive. Let's just move to all-mail ballot elections. And so that trend started out in the West. And now we've got three states who hold all-mail ballot elections. We've got California coming online with an option for their localities to do this. There's some test runs this time around, but by 2020, we should see many more counties in California that are all-mail ballot jurisdictions. places like New Jersey and Florida, you know, two states that I would say that we're going to see more and more mail balloting. And that's going to, again, feed eventually, I think, into perhaps all mail ballot elections. You can go to a vote center, like a sort of like a super polling location, and vote in person if you wish to do so. So it's not quite just all mail ballot elections. The other innovation that's happening is in West Virginia, that where military voters are allowed to vote by an app. And so we'll monitor and see how that works this time around. But that's, most of our voting innovations have come through the military first. So it's something else to be looking for in, you know, the next 10, 20 years. Do other states start adopting an app for military voters? And then do they start offering that option to domestic civilian voters as well?
Michael, Sasha, thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks, Amy.
All right, thank you.
Michael McDonald is a professor at the University of Florida and founder of the U.S. Elections Project. And Sasha Eisenberg is author of The Victory Lab.